Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Dave Tree.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today, it's somebody that joins me for every episode when he's not too busy putting the world to rights, saving small children from raging rivers. Dave, tell people what you're up to. Give yourself a more interesting introduction than that.
I can't now. Like, you always do this to me because it's like, oh, well, I can't introduce, you know, let him introduce. And I always try and think of something witty or funny and like, you then always throw in a curveball about like me saving kids from like, you know, rapid rivers and stuff like that, which,
yeah,
where the hell did that come from?
I don't know.
That's what I mean. It just then completely throws me. You're like, okay, yeah. Hi, everyone. It's me, Dave. Hello. No, hello, everyone. It's Dave calling from all the cool stuff. Although our previous episode, we were, you know, face to face, which was pretty awesome.
We were face to face at London Film and Comic Con on the Star Wars Q&A stage in the Star Wars Zone, brought to you by Fantatrax. Even though most of the show, I basically kept saying, welcome to the London Film and Comic Con, brought to you by Fantatrax. I don't mind if people think that London Film and Comic Con was brought to them by Fantatrax.
It was all us.
It's all reflected glory. I'll take as much as we can get.
Yeah, that whole thing. A lot of work went into that, you know. You're welcome.
Considering only 20 of us did it, a hell of a lot. I mean, packed it all down in 6 hours. We're amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. But what you been up to, Mark? You know, how you doing?
Well, post London Film and Comic Con, Q&A stage, Star Wars Zone, brought to you by Fantatrax. It's been very busy because obviously we had a lot of audio. We had an awful lot of audio. So I think we're still rolling those out on the site. There's more to come later on the week. And certainly for at least the next 2 weeks, there'll be interviews from the Q&A stage. So there's more of that. As we speak, tomorrow we'll see the launch of our latest podcast on Fantatrax Radio, Desert Planet Discs, with Carl Bayliss and Greg Robertson. Looking forward to that. I've just today received the second episode of Planet Layer. Next week we record episode 3 of Cannon Fodder. So podcasts, as you can probably tell, are very busy. Today we went over 2,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yay!
So Martin and yourself should be very happy with that. So that's all good news. So that's ticking over nicely.
I'm Corey D, and I get my Star Wars news from Fantatrax.
Our special guest today is Anthony Daniels. We've got a chat with Anthony that we recorded just last week as we speak. So that will be rolling up very, very soon. We also go back, because we're a bit of a time machine, we go back to Burnley, Star Wars Fan Fun Day 2019, where we catch up with Dylan Mia. And we've also got Paul Naylor, lovely silky voice Paul Naylor. He was out at Who Fest last weekend. So he also had a couple of interviews. He spoke to Brian Muir and Matthew Dale. So all of that's coming on this episode of Making Tracks. What should we do, Dave? Should we just dive straight in and get in with our first interview?
Let's do it.
This is Anthony Daniels. I was very fortunate. I was invited to his, believe it or not, to his house, well, apartment in London. I won't say where, because I don't want to send any battle droids after me. This is myself and Anthony Daniels talking about Star Wars, believe it or not, over a cup of tea and some nice biscuits. So I'm in London. I'm sitting next to Anthony Daniels. Welcome to the show.
I'm also in London.
You are also in London. None of this Skype nonsense.
Yeah, in our home in London, both of us.
Both of us.
With my wife, Christine.
Yes, with a wonderful cup of tea, by the way. Thank you very much for that. Right. And biscuits. How are you?
I think I'm good. One should never be too presumptuous about these things, because who knows? But today, I'm good.
It's a good day.
Yeah.
What have you been up to lately?
Well, haven't I? Not too lately. We did... do you mean yesterday, the day before, whatever?
As far back as you want to go.
Life is wonderfully full at the moment. Partly it's full of life, which is great, because sometimes work can rather deliciously take over everything. But there comes a payoff moment where you think, I want some time off now and to do normal things. And get things organized and, I don't know, lead a life. But only a few a couple of weeks ago, suddenly, you know, there I am, unexpectedly back in the gold suit doing pickups at actually Shepperton Studios, normally we're at Pinewood. And that came out of the blue, and suddenly in the middle of your arrival, I get an email from JJ saying, would I mind recording a couple of lines on my cell phone and, yes. and sending them to him because he wants to try something out. And that just makes me laugh. So Star Wars is always somewhere lurking in a cupboard or the front doorbell or whatever. And that's great.
Is Star Wars never wrapped in the sense that when you did your first batch of filming on Episode 9, and it's a wrap, and then they call you back, do you never take it for granted that you...
You can never take it for granted. It's quite alarming. Only, you know, there's got to come a point where they actually print the film, although that happens digitally now, so it kind of can be fairly last minute. I am waiting for JJ to officially get me into a studio rather than our spare bedroom to record lines, because these are just test tracks for him. But at some point in the next couple of months, he and I do have to get together to put the voice on, to revoice 3PO, because, as you know, on the set, the quality is not actually usable. But it was great to see all sorts of production people and cast the other day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it isn't over, and it really isn't over until, first of all, hopefully you've been paid, and secondly, you're sitting there watching the movie, because that's the point where you can't fiddle with it anymore, unless there's a special edition a few years down the line.
Well, that has happened before.
There are precedents for that.
Yeah. So I remember when we spoke years ago that you'd just done your first episode of the Clone Wars, and you said that you recorded it in a small studio not far from...
Yeah,
presumably from here.
That's right, in Soho, which is, you know, land of studios of all sorts of sizes and splendour and terrific technical support and so on. And, often I'm in a studio there by myself and either just listening to a director in California, usually, through a headset, or sometimes we have a Skype connection so they can actually physically watch me making a fool of myself physically in the studio, because... I don't sit down recording, because 3PO is not a sitting character.
I was going to say, very rarely is he off his feet, isn't he?
Yeah, I know, it's a pain. All those days standing up. But he's a very upright character, and so if I physically, as me, sit down, it does alter where your diaphragm is, and it also is your energy. And again, it suddenly occurs to me... it's like if I'm at a convention, as many people will know, I do stand up all the time, which, again, is killing. But it's a different kind of energy and a connection with somebody who's standing in front of you.
Sure.
You know, if they're standing, I should stand.
Well, you did start... Oh, you said Musical Journey. You did Star Wars in concert.
I did Musical Journey to begin with, which was a kind of crazy title. And it became Star Wars in concert.
Yeah.
And what a fantastic... And that, hopefully people listening will have seen it around Europe and around America, England. Absolutely. I mean, it was magical in the other sense.
Yeah.
It was a magical experience. And actually, it's funny, because always the stages we were on were huge, very, very wide arena stages.
Yeah.
And I remember sometimes, maybe with general age or jet lag or whatever, sometimes I would be on stage left and think, oh, God, I've got to walk all the way across and speak at the same time. Yeah. No pleasing.
You speak very passionately about that process of doing that and being in front of a live crowd, because it did feel like a rock concert, a Star Wars rock concert. It had that energy, didn't it?
I hadn't thought of that phrase, and it's right, because the production, Greg Perloff and Another Planet Touring, created this hugely dynamic experience with lasers and lights and whatever. Originally also Kabuki Drop, the most staggering piece of stagecraft with the giant curtain dropping to the floor, kind of silk, all backlit. And can you imagine what it was like for me being there, being amongst the smoke and the lasers and whatever? And also on the... I would come on stage right, so on my right was this vast audience. I think 25,000 in Houston was the biggest.
Wow.
Possibly too big. That's an arena beyond... Yeah. And they could all see me because of the giant screen and so on. And in normal arenas, there would be 15,000 people a night. And the energy that would come back from them was phenomenal. And always John's music, whether it's the Crazy Cantina thing or Leia's love theme or whatever. So that was an extraordinary experience, and it began here in London at the O2.
Is it something you would like to, given now we've moved, it's 10 years ago, so there's been three more soundtracks and other stuff, is that something you would relish revisiting at some
point? I would do it, as Harrison would say, in a Hollywood minute. So many fans I meet at various places say, saw you in whichever city it was, and how much it meant to them, not only for the history of their association with Star Wars through the family line, you know, three generations, but also the excitement of the marriage of specially edited film clips with John Williams' music played live by really good orchestras.
Yeah.
The whole thing had a major impact, and they would love to see it again. Disney seemed to have moved on to just showing the film with live. I kind of don't get it, really.
I know, it's an enjoyable experience, but it's you, so it was always enjoyable because it's you, it's you coming out, it's you doing it.
It's the first time I understood the story, actually, because it was written, it was kind of co-written, and we edited it in such a way that, oh, I see, oh, he's him, and she, I get it. Cut out all the irrelevant Jedis and all that kind of thing. Question, can a Jedi ever be irrelevant? Possibly. It helped me understand the story, and what I did like, it connected my previous stage career, so-called, a live audience, and that wonderful connection of liveliness in the proper sense of the word. There's always that sense when an orchestra is playing live to picture, are they going to make that hit point when the explosion happens? Is the orchestra going to go boom? Because if they go boom a second earlier or a second later, it's like,
yeah,
that didn't work.
Yeah.
So rather like watching a motorcar race, people do quite enjoy the odd crash.
Never thought of it that way, but it's a good
show. Sheldon Kroeger is alive and well.
Oh, yes.
Hi, this is Steve Grad from Beckett Authentication, and I will tell you what, I approve and I authenticate Fantatrax, and you should too.
Now, you mentioned Celebration. Celebration, again, another arena for you where you can get up and interact, live interaction with people.
Yes.
You never know whether they might boo or cheer or whatever. You've got that live moment element. You clearly enjoy that.
I enjoy it. It's a form of tightrope walking because, frankly, I have no idea. Well, two things I have no idea about. First of all, I don't always have a true idea of what I'm going to do.
Sure.
So I'm
in the moment.
In the moment, because I'm on seat with the pants and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who the audience, what kind of mood they're in, what have they just sat through, what are they really looking forward to seeing, whatever. Their sense of humour, because you've got all sorts of ages, and sense of humour can, you know, move from a custard pie to a risky joke.
Sure.
You know, you're never sure. An interesting experience I had the other day, which was in Bonn. I went to an absolutely stunning convention, and conventions can vary.
Sure.
And this one was stunning, except, without my knowledge, I'd been booked to give a presentation at 10 o'clock in the morning. Think about it. To a foreign language audience. Now, German people, you know, make us look stupid with their ability with languages.
Yes.
But anyway, I bounced on stage at 10 o'clock, forcing myself to get the adrenaline going. And they were a little 10 o'clock in the morning to begin with. But after a while, because I didn't sit in a chair in the middle of the stage and go, next question.
Yeah.
Yes, no, next question. Because I actually dynamically perform a story, because that's my way. Boy, did they have a good time. They never expected to be so assaulted at 10 o'clock in the morning as they were. And they in all parts of the arena, in the theatre, they joined in.
And you got a buzz out of that?
Yeah, because I succeeded in the thing that I rather wanted to do, in spite of what they thought was going to happen.
Sure.
And, of course, you meet failures, you know, from time to time, people who don't know how to respond, and other people who just delight in the humiliation of others, in the enjoyment of others, etc. So it's a dynamic experience. But you will rarely catch me sitting on the sofa being yes, no, interlude.
No. I mean, you've kind of, in a way, or more than in a way, you've become an ambassador for Star Wars in the sense that you will just grab a mic and get up and go.
Yes, I think it's a compulsion to try and make people feel comfortable. It's kind of useless. You know, they come here, gosh, we'd better, I don't know, make tea or something. And of course, I have been very lucky over the years to, in a general sense, be an ambassador by fronting various exhibitions like The Art of Star Wars, The Costume, The Power of Costume, Where Science Meets Imagination. And so I would go to various foreign cities, whether Australia or Mexico City or Los Angeles, and do, as it were, fronting various gala evenings and so on. Because as 3PO, I probably share that ability. Of course, one of the great joys, at Celebration, is when Warwick Davis kind of worms his way into my area, and we persecute each other.
Where did that cultivate from?
Because I don't know.
Such a great relationship.
Yeah, Warwick's got such a huge brain, you know, and such a really ready wit that we. actually, I do remember. It was at one of those Disney weekends, and he was one of the guests on stage, and I think the person said to me, and then Warwick said, "I've got a question. When you put on the costume, does everything go stiff?"
There's a question.
And I looked at him, and then he realised what he'd said, and I made it look like it was deliberate. And I think from that moment, I made him go and stand in the corner.
Oh yeah,
not any filth like that.
Then much missed. You mentioned Star Wars weekends. I mean, wouldn't it be great if they brought those back? They seem so. I never got to one. Big regret. They seem so much fun.
They were huge fun. They were huge, huge, huge. And let me say, they were also huge. Yeah. Hard work.
Oh yeah.
And they were huge as well.
Huge. Mm. And they were go go go, weren't they?
It was exhausting. Absolutely exhausting. But very inventive. Great fun. I had to slightly swallow my feelings of looking like a prat sitting on the back of a vintage vehicle in a parade waving,
Do you just buy it? You just have to buy into it.
You have to buy into it, bite your lip, grin, and not bear it, but grin. And when you get backstage, you know, wipe the sweat off your face and all that kind of thing. And but it's a kind of, you're giving people an innocent joy. They will never know what it's costing you inside, and neither should they.
No. The 9th episode is about to come out. But for you personally, as a journey from 75 right through to 2019, how are you now sort of framing it? How are you looking back at that time period? Or are you? Is it just what you did?
It's what I did. Yes, I don't have any spectacular Zen theories about it all. It's what happened to me.
Are you satisfied with what happened to you?
In part.
And now, with this film specifically, back with JJ, as he was on Force Awakens, you're grinning. So I'm assuming it was a good experience.
Oh, yeah, crazy but good.
Yeah.
Good but crazy. And it's not over yet.
No. And satisfying, is that a word we can use to sum up this particular experience?
I think satisfying in many ways. Satisfying for me, satisfying for 3PO, satisfying as an experience, and I'm not paid to say this, but I believe it will be satisfying for the audience. I think the fans will have a sense of, oh, thank you.
That sounds like something that we can all look forward to. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure.
So Sunday the 27th of October, Anthony will be appearing at the London Literature Festival in Anthony Daniels' My Life as C-3PO. It's on at the Queen Elizabeth Hall at the South Bank Centre. And he'll be talking about his forthcoming memoirs. I referred to them erroneously as an autobiography. They're not. It's not an autobiography, it's memoirs. And if you've got the opportunity to get down there, I would recommend going, because I would imagine it will be a wonderful night.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. Welcome to Making Tracks.
So back in May, at Star Wars Fan Fun Day, we were very fortunate. We had the chance to talk to loads of really cool guests. And the final interview that we recorded that has yet to go out on either Planet Leia or on Making Tracks was with Dilu Mia. Dilu was in The Force Awakens. He was in Rogue One. He's a creature performer. And this is my quick little chat with him as all the guests were being kicked out with happy smiling faces full of hot dogs.
So we're here at Star Wars Fun Fun Day.
Yep.
And we're near the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it's winding down, but there's still loads of kids around, which
is
cool.
Which is nice.
I'm here with Dilu. How's your day been?
It's been good. It's been really The response has been amazing, actually.
Yeah?
I've really been happy with the fans today.
Have you done Fan Day before?
This is my first time doing Fan Fun Day, so I'm actually... Yeah, and it's been amazing. I genuinely didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And it's like beyond my expectations, really. It's been really fun. What an amazing response.
Here's a question, then. That's a good point. What were your expectations? What did you think it would be like?
I didn't think... the fact that it's only Star Wars, yeah, which is great because you know you're not competing against,
sure,
Doctor Who or anyone else. But it's been good. Like, we've had some amazing, the guests are amazing. They're all so much fun anyway, and you know they all look like they're having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
The people are genuinely having a good time. It looks like, you know, and just the fact that everyone's just, the response has been amazing, yeah, for us. So. Yeah, it's just been good.
When do you get the chance then to come face to face with fans of the films and you have the capacity to talk about the characters that you play? Do you enjoy that, getting into those kind of conversations?
I do, yeah, because outside of this, I don't really speak about Star Wars as much.
Sure.
And sometimes you forget that you've been on such an iconic movie.
Yeah.
That, like, honestly, when I... Because I don't do many events, many Comic-Cons, so when I do get it, it just hits me again,
yeah,
that I've been on one of the biggest films, you know. Yeah, in the past, absolutely. You know, I've been in one of the biggest movies of all time, and I matter. My character, you know, people actually care. And you forget. It's amazing.
I was going to say, not that you'd ever be blasé about it, but we're looking at your images on the table here. Obviously, we're on
Solo
there, and
yeah,
you know, obviously, this one we spoke before, Force Awakens.
That was back then. Yeah.
Yeah. So, of the film experiences you've had so far, which one? Not to say any is better than any other, but which one kind of sticks in your mind the most?
Probably Solo, because I got to go away for it. I feel like by that time in Force Awakens, it was one of my first gigs and it was one of the biggest that I ever done.
Yeah, yeah.
But after having done 2-3, by the time I got to Solo, I felt like I was comfortable.
Sure.
I knew who I was, I knew what I was doing,
yeah,
and I was able to fall into my character a lot easier. You know, I was able to express what my character wants, you know, to be that character,
yeah,
a lot easier. So I just felt more comfortable.
It's got to be the kind of skill, I would imagine, never having been in a mask or anything, yeah, like that, but I've got to imagine the more you do it, the more you learn how to, the
that's
nuances.
It. Yeah, you're able to bring the character alive a lot easier,
yeah,
which is sometimes quite difficult, especially when you're not moving the there's the animatronics team that's moving the yeah, face itself, but you're doing the rest. You are the character. So what you do accentuates the face and everything else. So
yeah,
honestly, it makes a difference after having done 2 or 3. If it was my first one, for example, I think I wouldn't have been as comfortable.
Yeah.
I felt comfortable in my skin, even though it wasn't my skin, you know what I mean?
That's a good way to put it. That's a really good way to put it.
I was comfortable, yeah.
And so, I mean, I was saying to Ari earlier, obviously Peter Mayhew who passed away this year, and the guy that you think of in a mask, able to convey those emotions.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy the challenge and the process? Because obviously every costume's slightly different.
Forty Ventura was a lot... the challenge was the heat.
Yeah.
As well as, it was just ridiculous. I was wearing, like, 4 or 5 layers. And then it was like scorching hot.
Yeah.
And it was super windy at the same time. So people were getting windburns, people were getting like, you know, sunburns.
Yeah.
But at the same time, having to do those scenes, you know, any given time, being 4 or 5 hours in the costume, that was difficult enough. But then just portraying the character, you know, and being, becoming the person you're playing. Yeah, it was challenging, but because if I hadn't done all the other movies, I wouldn't have known what to expect.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was there and I knew what I was doing, so.
And when it's done and you go away and then ILM and all the other guys and John Powell, the music, and you come and see the film at Castle Crew or whatever screening it might be, does that still blow you away?
Yeah, yeah, honestly, it's because you only see so much.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the you're just part of the pre-production kind of post, and then you don't see all the magic they put in. It's already magic when you're there because the amount of effort they put into costume, the amount of effort they put into the set, the location, where you are. Because I went to Fort Ventura of all places to film this.
There,
you know what I mean? You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And the people that were there, there were times where. Some of the main cast, the guy who played Solo, for example, we're just walking back from the beach together. It's, you know, it was really strange, it's bizarre, the fact that we were all there just hanging out. Yeah, you forget that. Yeah, until you watch the movie and you're thinking, wow, that was an amazing experience. Oh, yeah. It was really good. Really amazing experience.
So, daftest question I'm going to ask anybody today. Clearly, you would love to do it again.
Oh, so badly, yeah. If not Star Wars, I'm sure I'd get something else.
Yeah.
But, Star Wars was the biggest film I've done so far.
Yeah.
I know it'll eventually come to an end, but I know they got some other things lined up for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Netflix and all sorts. Yeah. But Doctor Who would be nice.
Yeah.
Doctor Who, anything costume related is good for me.
So what else are you into?
Yeah, I'll be happy to Doctor Who. I'm trying to become a stuntman myself, so I recently worked on a show in Tunisia, which was just a cool experience. I got to work with a pack of wolves. Maybe I shouldn't be mentioning it, but that was really cool. So anything really, I like costume. I like. I love the stunts. That was like my first.
Yeah.
That's how I got into it to begin with. So I'm just working towards that. But yeah, anything to do with costume, I'd be happy. And any Star Wars, you know, I can't say no to. So.
And of course, if there is, yeah. Look at all you've done already.
Yeah,
but if there
exactly.
is, it keeps coming. To
and another thing, like I love. Yeah, I love this. This is these circuits are just amazing.
Yeah.
I don't do many, but just recently. This time last year, I was in Japan. I went away for a week, which is amazing, you know. And the fan base is immense, and the people you get, and some of the response you get, is just amazing. Yeah, so
brilliant.
That I'll never get used to. I don't think I'll ever get used to.
That's good that you don't know.
Yeah,
it's not,
because I like the fact that you can take time off, you can come back, and you can feel that magic again. You know, it really is. It really is. And it's not, you're not just having fun, the fans are happy.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a big deal.
You're
getting
a kick out of people, we're getting a kick out of it.
It's a big deal, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, you've given us a kick, so I really appreciate
you.
Your time.
Cheers.
Thanks as always.
No worries.
So, Mark, where you were talking earlier about one of our latest podcast additions to the Fanthatrax family of, like, Desert Planet Discs, have you had a chance to listen to Planet Leia yet?
I have listened to Planet Leia. It's been gestating for, wow. I mean, I was going to make an analogy to how long does a Sarlacc gestate for, but I don't actually know. I'm just assuming it's quite a long time. It's been gestating for quite a long time. For the longest time, internally, they're making a sound like Lucasfilm there. It was known as Transatlantic Tracks. That was the pre-show name for it. So forever it's been Transatlantic Tracks. And then I think Claire thought, oh no, we can come up with a better name than that. So it became Planet Leia.
Is that the excuse that Claire gave?
That's what she said.
And not because she just loves Princess Leia.
A bit of both.
For anybody who's out there who is listening that hasn't had a chance to catch it yet, we have some great shows on Fanthatrax Network already. We've got the Fantha from Down Under with Adam O'Brien, Making Tracks with Mark and myself, Desert Planet Discs, which is all about music, and then Planet Leia, which is encompassing the female side of the fandom. But like that doesn't necessarily mean it's squarely only that. It's a wide net. On Planet Leia, you've got Claire, Christy, and Becca. But what was really awesome for me to hear was the wider Fantha team as well, like Joanna and Megan as well, and
Patty.
Where we were all together at Celebration, and where I wasn't even part of those conversations, you could literally put me back in Celebrate in Chicago there and then, because you could hear all that ambient background noise and things like that. And it was really, really quite cool for me to see. So I'm very excited to see what comes out for the future episodes of Planet Leia and Desert Island. A desert island, desert planet discs, especially if Greg is going to be Darth Elvis throughout the whole episode.
Well, you'll have to listen to find out.
I've got to know. We've been bouncing some silly ideas backwards and forwards of like lyrics. Well, I say this, he's probably like, oh God, it's Dave.
He's probably already recorded them.
Stop trying. You know, he's like there typing. And I'm just like coming up with whatever nonsense. And he's just like, yeah, okay. Yeah,
what rhymes with who, Jib? Flu jab.
Exactly. You know, you can just imagine, and you're just like, ha, 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 LOL, you know.
I'm going to put the smiley face, whatever he says, yeah.
It's like, oh, just put him out of his misery. It's really great, because one of the great things with all the things that like Fanthatrax does is we're still very young.
Yeah, we're not even 2 years old yet.
No, and we're still growing, and we're still developing new initiatives and things like that. And what we did for the Star Wars Zone at London Film and Comic Con, brought to you by Fantatrax.
Right.
That, to me, that was a phenomenal achievement. You know, that was like a crowd engagement one. We got like the audio side of things that we've just been talking about. You just mentioned that we've like hit 2,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is fantastic on that front. And then there's the other sort of like social media channels as well that we operate within, all coming from that one website. And I think it's really, really quite cool, all very exciting. So even though it's still relatively early days, to like now start be developing some of this new dedicated content in quite some specific areas is really quite exciting. So I'm super proud of the team involved on that front. I can only thank you all for persevering.
For reading your song lyrics, that's what you mean.
Yeah. Actually, I could be that person on every episode. Oh, we've got an email in from a listener. But it would just be like anonymous. Go, what about this for an idea?
Could I just say that you are that person on every episode?
But to me, it's really genuinely really cool, yeah. Because in the areas of people's expertise and enjoyment and things like that, and I think it really does like come across when people are talking about things that they are like definitely passionate about. So if you haven't already, please go check out all of our podcasts. Let them know what you think. You know, feedback to them, feedback to us. I'd be quite interested to hear what people make of this.
Are you sure? Are you sure you want to invite that kind of interaction?
Do it.
I'm not sure
do
I do.
But no, I think it's great. I think it's really, really cool. Long may it continue.
It is really cool. And we've got, as I say, we've now got Fanta Down Under, Making Tracks, Cannon Fodder, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs. And there's at least three other shows that I'm aware of. One that you're working on, one that I'm working on with Paul Naylor, and another. Could potentially be eight shows on the go. Plus the YouTube channel as well. So yes, it's all going fantastically well. You speak about people having knowledge in specific areas of Star Wars. One person who has a lot of knowledge about a specific Star Wars area is Brian Muir. He was the guy that sculpted the original, so iconic, it's ridiculous, helmet of Darth Vader. At WhoFest, which took place in Shropshire recently, Paul Naylor, one of our roving reporters, was out and he was there and he chatted with Brian Muir about his time working on Star Wars.
Okay, so I'm at Who Farm at WhoFest, and I'm with Brian Muir, who is best known for the sculpt of Darth Vader's helmet and also work on the Stormtrooper helmet, C-3PO and other droids. Hello, Brian.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hello there. So just talk me through your involvement in the first Star Wars film, A New Hope.
Well, I had a phone call. I'd been out of the industry for a couple of years, having served an apprenticeship at Elstree, and I was asked if I'd like to go and work on a sci-fi film that had some strange characters to sculpt. I was keen to go back into the industry, so I said yes. So at the beginning of January 76, I turned up at Elstree Film Studios, and my first character to start on was the Stormtrooper armour. And because there were so many and they were going to do them vacuum form,
yeah.
I had a plaster model at 5'10" height, with the idea being that whatever I sculpted on it would fit on anyone from 5'8" to 6'.
Yeah.
So I did every individual bit to echo into the next bit,
yeah.
So it worked as a full bodysuit of armour.
That's right.
And it worked pretty well. It's lasted over the years. A lady called Liz Moore did the helmet.
Yeah.
Had worked on the picture. She sculpted C-3PO. And then at the end of January, she left the picture, so I had to finish all the finishing work on C-3PO,
yeah.
But they gave her the Stormtrooper helmet to do,
yeah.
While she was out in Holland with her boyfriend.
Oh, right.
He set a workshop up for her and she sculpted the Stormtrooper helmet. After I'd done the finishing work on C-3PO, John Burry, the designer, called me in and said, would I go down and see John Mollow? He had a little drawing on a new character. Well, the new character was Darth Vader. So I got the drawing from John. It was just a small drawing, line drawing, about 5 inches high, just from one angle, no suggestion of form or shape, just simple lines. And I did it from that. But they actually moulded Dave Prowse, a full body mould head, and reproduced him in plaster. So I knew that whatever I sculpted and they cast in fiberglass would fit back onto Dave Prowse. The last two that I did was the head of the Death Star droid,
yep,
which was seen in the sand crawler.
Yep.
And they also used it as another character, RA-7.
Yep.
And the last one I did was CZ3,
yeah,
which was a quite strange character.
Was that the one that was a bit beaten up?
Yeah, and it was in the sand crawler. But you also see it walking down to Mos Eisley.
That's right.
And Anthony Daniels was inside.
Oh, right, okay.
CZ3, and he said it's one of his favourite characters.
Was that the one that was limping a bit? Was that droid limping?
No, I think he had his arm
a
bit like he did in free.
Never mind, boys.
But so that was my involvement in Star Wars.
Yeah. And then you've been involved in other films such as Alien.
Alien, I did 10 Bond movies, 4 Harry Potter films,
yeah,
both Tomb Raiders,
wow,
all 3 Indiana Jones movies, Superman, and recently films like Guardians of the Galaxy.
So you're still working then?
No, I retired 3 years ago. Wow. I made Rogue One my last picture.
Yeah? Well, what did you do on Rogue One?
I can't talk about what I did.
Fair enough.
Contract like that.
Yeah. NDA, folks. NDA.
I can't talk about
it. So quite nice in a way that one of your last jobs was a Star Wars film.
Well, it was.
It was
my last film,
yeah,
was Star Wars. Yeah. And after my apprenticeship, I'd worked on small British films. And I went outside. I'd worked on Bell by the Queen and Queen Mother.
Yeah.
Prestigious work around London. So I started back into the film industry on Star Wars in 76.
Yeah.
And I finished my career on Rogue One. Now, when was that? About 2016?
Yeah, back 2015, 16, yeah.
I think it came out in 16. Yeah. I worked on it in 15.
Amazing. So you've got a good 40 years?
48 years.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I had a great time. I had a good career. And now we're travelling the world.
Yeah. Do you enjoy doing this?
I do enjoy it. I enjoy meeting fans.
Yeah.
People that they were kids when Star Wars come out, and it means so much to them. and I do a talk when I'm at conventions normally, where I've got a film with lots of work coming down from various films. So that goes down quite well. And the Q&A I do afterwards.
Do you ever get some really weird questions?
Yeah, you do get some strange ones.
What's your favourite one that you have?
It's hard to say, there's so many, but I mean, it's usually, I mean, the kids are so bright.
Some of them know more about it than you do.
A lot more than I do. In fact, I did a convention out in Ireland, and they decided to have a quiz. The actors one side and kids the other side, and they won hands down. They knew far more than we ever knew.
It's just a job.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that's pretty much right. Yeah. But I really respect the fact that I did it, and I'm
having
a great
time. Served you well, and you served it well, sir. Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
So I'm really pleased that Paul got to speak to Brian. I interviewed Brian back in 2006 at Memorabilia, when it was still Memorabilia back at the NEC. I think it was one of the first interviews he'd done. I think he was just coming back on the scene back then. Him and Lindsay were just sort of starting to talk to people. So that was back when I was doing Lightsaber. So that went out as a Lightsaber interview, which, of course, recently, Dave, I know you don't want to talk about this, you were a guest on Lightsaber back in 2007. And we just put that back up on Fantatracks for people to read. I know you're being very bashful about it, but I remember that time period very fondly because it was post-original Celebration Europe. So it was a good time to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was quite nice to reread that. I mean, it's 12 years ago. it was interesting to sort of see where your head's at, yeah, and what you're thinking in terms of Star Wars fandom and engaging with it. And when the Palatoy archive is brought up, it's always like Celebration Europe, but it often gets overlooked about the one that was done in Leicester, the Leicester Space Centre. Yeah. You know, there was like a smaller follow-up to that, which was pretty amazing as well. I think in that space of time, so much has grown and developed within the fandom that you take a lot of this sort of stuff for granted. It just happens. Yeah. And maybe in 12 years' time, we'll be saying the same again of what we're doing now. Yeah. And what's really good about that interview is it's time-stamped, not only from the point of view of it was the first European celebration, but also it refers to how you and I first met, which was like sort of like 1999, yeah, sort of like 2000 thereabouts, yeah, you know, when we first started talking, yeah, which is like 20 years or nearly 20 years. And you're thinking, oh, good God, like, you know, like, wow, where's the time
well
gone?
I'll tell you, so, what, when we reach that 20 years, near as damn it, when we get that, I'm coming down to you and you're going to buy me a pint. Is it Ringwood beer? The Ringwood beer?
Ringwood, yeah, best.
That was,
yeah,
just 49er. Insane. That's one of my favourite beers. So we'll have a pint of Ringwood. That's the way we celebrate that. It's nice for me personally because obviously Lightsaber was my original, yeah, Star Wars site and it was very close to my heart. So
it was amazing.
It was cool looking back. It's weird looking back with a bit of distance, but it's nice to be able to put that onto Fanthatrax and have it feel like it's part of the whole now. So I do get a kick out of doing that.
It was really something else. I had purchased fanzines and things like that, but I'd never seen anything to the degree of what you'd done with like Lightsaber online, if that makes, yeah, sense. Because the things I was like looking at back then were Toys R Us, which is, yeah, Star Wars Collectors Archive now, but you also had Rebel Scum and CollectStarWars.com, Yak Face. Those were like the, yeah, sort of main sort of sites that I, but they were all toy based ones, you know, they're all going on about collecting toys. And then Lightsaber was my sort of first one of like, well, this isn't actually necessarily based on physical stuff. This is user created material. Yeah. To me, it was mind boggling back then how much you kind of like done and that. So it was great to periodically just tune into that and just go through it. To me, it was a whole book in itself. You should be proud.
Yeah, I am. It's nice. It's not, like I say, it's nice to look back, and I'm glad that every Sunday we do the Vincent interviews. I think the week before it was the Irvin Kershner interview, which was a biggie, and there's some cool ones coming up. Next week it's my Celebration interview with Billy Dee Williams. I'm the only person to interview him at Celebration Europe. Not even the insider got him. That was a memorable one. He spent the whole interview crunching through a packet of biscuits. So, yeah. Yeah, so the audio maybe not so good, but the annotated one, really cool.
Definitely.
Happy days. And speaking of happy days, Paul Naylor went out into the Shropshire countryside. He went to Hoo Farm and he got a bunch of interviews. We've got two of them today, two on the next episode. The second one is with Matthew Dale from Rogue One.
So I'm at Hoo Farm at Hoo Fest, very noisy Hoo Fest, with Matthew Dale. And Matthew Dale, for Star Wars fans, is well known for being in Rogue One. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Hello. Just talk us through your part in Rogue One, please.
Basically, my part in Rogue One is a red Jedi pilgrim priest. It's the good one of the good guys. It's the tall red guy with this kind of square head.
They look very similar to an Emperor's Royal Guard, don't they?
True, but we're the good guys and they're the bad guys.
Yeah, that's the difference between a curve and a square, folks. Yeah. Square's good, curve's bad.
Yeah.
So you were seen on, it's right near the start of the film, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, in the Land of Jeddah. Yeah. I appear 19 times in the film, more than Darth Vader and a few other actors, so yeah. It's always good on that one.
He's bragging. Yeah. So what was the costume like to wear?
Very hot. You're basically wearing about 8 layers.
I'd say it looks very layered, yeah.
Yeah, lots of kind of thick style curtains that you drape all over you under. But it's just good fun. For 14 hour days,
yeah,
4 days worth of Pinewood, it was great.
Brilliant. And did you get to work with any of the major cast?
Yes, I got to work with Felicity as well as Diego.
Yeah.
And the rest, a few of the others, but
fantastic. Do you know at this stage whether you will get a recall to be in any forthcoming projects, or
I want
talk
to
about that.
I'll tell you what, I'll be screaming with excitement if I got that chance.
Listen up, folks.
Yeah. Screaming kids. It was a screaming opportunity to get back in. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't Matthew screaming with delight, by the way. That was some child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've been involved in other projects, such as
Doctor Screaming Who.
Doctor Screaming Who. Robin Screaming Hood, is this here?
Yeah. Robert Sherwood, yeah.
It is. I'm looking at a photo. Is that Rusty Goff?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
Rusty Goff, obviously familiar to Star Wars fans for his roles. So, as a jobbing actor, is there anything that's a standout for you that you've really enjoyed?
Doctor Who and Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Because you're quite tall, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 6'4.5". So that's why they give me a tall part. So.
Yeah. So you in the Robin Hood film, you were Little John?
Yeah, Little John, Doctor Who, yeah.
And what was that? Was that a TV series?
That was TV series Doctor Who, yeah.
Oh, so. That was part of Doctor Who.
Yeah,
And that was with, which Doctor was that?
Peter Capaldi.
Peter Capaldi. And was that an enjoyable?
Oh, that was so much fun. Yeah. I loved it. We did 8 days on filming, 12-hour days, and I loved it.
I bet he's a good character, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good laugh, yeah.
Oh, dear. And what was Rusty Goff like? So I've met Rusty a few times. He's hilarious.
Basically, the truth is, me and him don't get on. He doesn't like me.
That's the tall and short of it, I take it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's a petty thing. He just doesn't like me.
Really?
And I just think it's childish at the end of the day. But I'm like, okay. You can't please everybody.
You can't get on with everybody, can you, Matthew?
No.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But it's a great photo that I'm looking at here with you and Rusty and the rest of the Robin Hood crew.
I think it's just a tall order over him, I think.
So Rogue One, when that came out, and you sat down at the cinema and you saw yourself on the screen.
I went to the film 8 times, by the way.
I bet. And I bet you sat there and you go, that's me.
Every time.
I'm in Star Wars. Were you a Star Wars fan growing up?
Yeah.
So, much like other actors I've spoken to who grew up with the franchise and are now appearing in it. It's like a dream come true, isn't it?
It's like with me and Doctor Who as well. I was a dream come true with me and Doctor Who, so yeah.
So clearly, you're living the dream, sir. Living the dream. And have you got any other irons in the fire?
I've just been filming a film called Lawrence After Arabia.
I've
got a main talking part in that, and it's out in May next year, 2020.
Fantastic.
I've got two film premieres to go to, and I'm looking forward to that. So.
Wow.
Including one down London. So.
Fantastic. Well, good luck with those.
Cheers.
It's been a pleasure speaking to
Thank
you.
Thank you.
So Matthew is a acting professional who lives in this neck of the woods. He's down between Poole and Dorchester, I do believe, and is best known to people in terms of his most visible role. He played Little John in Doctor Who series, but within the realms of like Star Wars, he was one of the very noticeable Jedi priests in Rogue One, who were the guys who were very similar looking to the Emperor's Royal Guards, but they were boxed. They seem to be kind of loosely similar to the Emperor's Royal Guards, but not the Emperor's Royal Guards. And he was one of those that you see at various points in like crowd scenes and things like that. And I think it is just referred to as a Jedi priest. Has there actually ever sort of been expansion into all of those sorts of different things that were going on Jedi? Have they given it a background to those things?
I don't believe so, not to any great degree. And obviously the guy, the Rogue One visual guide, I know there's some detail in there, and it, Jedi was heavily touched on in the mainline Star Wars title.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've gone into any great detail on the Jedi priest. They should, unless it's in Guardian of the Worlds, the book, which came out, which I haven't read. So maybe one of our listeners may know a little bit more about that. I think that focused mainly on Chirrut and Baze.
That's what I was going to like come to next, is that they're not dressed in any shape or form that relates to that. Mm. And those red priests aren't the only clergy, so to speak, that you see in those crowd scenes, are there? There's a couple of different things. So I don't know if that was kind of where it's like a holy city as such, if there's been kind of any expansion into that sort of like territory, or is it, you know, just borrowing on the kind of real world influences that you would see in those parts of the world where you see, you know, lots of different people wearing attire related to whatever their belief is.
Yeah. We've got the Cassian TV series coming up, so there's potential there. If there's any involvement of Jedi, I mean, he seems familiar with Jeddah, so you know, if there's any involvement there, there's always the possibility that, you know, you might see a bit more of that, hopefully.
Let's see some Bomar monks. I love that whole idea of getting to spiritual enlightenment and
pulling the brain
out. Yeah. I mean, it's ripe for expansion. You know, you got some really crazy ideas that you can do on that front. I'd like to see that.
I think that, you know, it's such a good time for Star Wars at the moment, creatively, you know, the avenues that are available, especially now that Episode 9 will wrap up the Skywalker saga. You know, now everything's essentially a standalone or the start of a new trilogy or something different, something fresh. So now we can really dive into the nooks and crannies and investigate these things, especially given that Disney Plus is coming and there's television options and live action and animated as well. So a lot of these things, like Bomar monks, like Jeddah priests, you know, you might just get to see a bit more of them.
I'd like to see that.
I'm Derek Arnold, and I get my news from FanFatrax.
So for those out there that are attending any of the following shows, FanFatrax will be in attendance in one form or another. So from the 23rd to the 25th of August, the unbeatable Martin Keeler will be attending D23. He's headlining the show.
Yeah, he is. He's being made a Disney legend.
He's being inducted into the Disney Hall of Fame. And so he's representing FanFatrax out there. So if you're heading to D23, you'll be able to, like, catch Martin there. We've got Keystone Comic Con in Philadelphia as well. Saturday, the 24th of August, we've got Granite City Comic Con. And you'll be able to find Darth Elvis there. From the 30th of August to the 2nd of September, you've got the New York State Annual, which is held in New York, and Richard Hutchinson is going over there to represent the Vintage Rebellion. He might mention FanFatrax, but, you know, I don't know if we're cool enough there for him, but, like, probably never. Rich will be heading out over there. So we've got a few appearances for the rest of August that if you're in attendance on any of those, let us know, drop us a line. It'd be good to see you. And then we're going to also kind of keep you abreast of all the other appearances that we've got. So we're attending quite a lot of events all throughout each month, not just necessarily in the UK either. The wider team is spread out, so we'll give you the heads up where we'll be appearing and things like that. And because we always talk about these things after the fact, but very rarely do we talk about, hey, if you're coming to this thing, you can catch us there.
We'll make that a regular fixture of the show then. We'll let people know where we're going to be, and not just you and me, but the rest of the team, because like you say, we're spread fairly wide now, so we've got a fairly good coverage. So yes, listen out for that in the future. We're going to make sure we do that each episode, so you know where you can find us. If you want to find our podcasts, you can find it on FanTrax Radio, which is the home of FanTrax podcasts, on fantatrax.com. You can email us, radio@fantatrax.com. you can comment on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Tumblr. You can leave messages at our YouTube channel, which has now gone over 2,000 subscribers. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Android, Spotify, SoundCloud. You can subscribe on TuneIn, listen on iHeartRadio or on Spreaker. You can find us on smart speakers such as Amazon Alexa, Apple HomePod, Google Home and Sonos. And you can also get us in your car or your land speeder with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, on your gaming consoles and television. And of course, you'll find us on FanTrax TV on YouTube or the FanTrax app. And for all those details, head to FanTrax Radio on our dedicated landing page. Dave, thank you again for being my co-host on the latest episode of Making Tracks. I think our next episode will be another interview piece from London Film and Comic Con, brought to you by FanTrax. That is to say, the Star Wars Q&A stage in the Star Wars Zone is brought to you by FanTrax, not all of London Film and Comic Con. Although if people want to believe that, they can. But please, if you've got any complaints, don't email us. Email them. Just want to make that clear. So we will see you all for the next episode of Making Tracks. Bye, Dave.
See you later. Bye.